Okay, Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24, we'll begin in verse 15. Jesus says, when ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, when you see him stand in the holy place, then let them which are in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe unto them that are with child and to them that give suck in those days. But pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. Let me remind you what we learned last week regarding the abomination of desolation. 3.5 years into the tribulation period, at the halfway period, the Antichrist will have, by that time, he will have gained the confidence of Israel and most of the world. And the Jews are going to trust him to provide safety for them, to keep them from the enemies that surround them. He's going to make all of these promises, and they're going to believe those promises, and they're going to trust in him. And he's going to be seen by Israel as the great deliverer. He's going to be seen as one that is answering an answer to their longtime prayers for peace in their land. And all of this is going to just seem like everything's just going well, in spite of the fact that there's a lot of turmoil in the world. Israel is going to be thinking things are looking up. And then that's when suddenly the Antichrist is going to turn, and he's going to rip his mask off, if you will, and reveal his true character. And they're going to discover very suddenly, they're midway through the tribulation, that that he's not what he said he was, and that in actuality, far from being helpful to them or protecting them, he's going to have a tremendous amount of hatred towards them and the God that they serve. And this great unveiling of all of these truths is going to be carried out when he commits what's called the abomination of desolation. And we talked about that in great detail last week. It's spoken of in verse 15 there. And it's simply put, without spending a lot of extra time on it, the Antichrist will actually enter into the temple there in Jerusalem. By that time, it will have been rebuilt. We don't have a temple in Jerusalem now, so that'll have to come to pass by then. It'll be rebuilt, and he's going to enter into the temple, a place where he shouldn't be at all, and he's going to exalt himself as God. He's going to put an end. He's going to lay desolate, lay waste, if you will, to all of the holy practices of the Jews in the temple, and he's going to putting all of that temple activity to an end, he's going to have abominable sacrifices made to him. He's going to be the one that is worshipped, to be worshipped in the temple from that time forward. And so that's going to be a tremendous turning point, not just for Israel, but it's going to be a turning point in the tribulation and really for the rest of the world, because all hell breaks loose from there. The judgments that are spoken of in Revelation from chapter 5 all the way to chapter 16, there's 21 different judgments that are spoken of during those chapters. The seal judgments, the trumpet judgments, and the vial judgments. That's good reading if you ever want to get into that. It's all bad stuff that's going to happen here on this earth, but we as Christians won't be here. But you can learn about that. All of that's going to be released upon the earth going forward in that second half of the tribulation. Now notice what he says in verse 21. He says, for then shall be great tribulation. Okay, he uses that adjective there just to communicate just what I've just said there. It's going to be worse than the first half. The rapture is going to take place 3.5 years prior, and it's going to be a 7-year tribulation, 7 years without the church, 7 years without the Spirit of God moving upon the earth. But it's going to get worse in that second half. It's going to get ugly, folks. It's going to get uglier, as verse 21 says, than it's ever been or ever will be again. And so in this text, Jesus is warning the Jews. In verse 15 through 20 there, he's simply saying, when you see this abomination of desolation, essentially he's saying, run for your lives, because you're on your own. And the Antichrist is not who he said he would be. He can't protect you. He wouldn't protect you if he could. And really and truly, he has become your greatest threat. And so all things God, whether it be the Jewish people or the Christians that are, the people are converted to Christ during that tribulation period, they're all, anything related to God is going to be the target of the assaults of the Antichrist. And it's going to be the loyalty of those converted Christians and the Jews, the loyalty to God and their refusal to worship the Antichrist when he goes into the temple is going to just throw gasoline on the fire, because he has an ire against them. He has a great amount of anger already, and it's just going to further cause him to further unleash his wrath upon those believing Jews and Christians, okay? And so Jesus says in verse 16, when you see all this happen, he says, then let them which be in Judea flee to the mountains. Obviously, Judea is the immediate region around Jerusalem, okay? It's that whole region. And the Antichrist has set himself up in the temple, and so it makes sense, it stands to reason, that those that are in Judea, that close proximity to Jerusalem, are going to be the most vulnerable and in the most danger, okay? And that's why he says your best hope is to flee to the mountains. Go where you can and hide. And according to the writings of the prophet Zechariah, I believe it's in Zechariah chapter 13, only a third of those who flee from that region will survive. Two-thirds of it which would be millions and millions of people. Two-thirds of them will be massacred. They would perish in that under the assault of the surrounding nations and the Antichrist. Okay, it's going to be a massacre of the Jews that's going to make all other massacres, including the Holocaust, it's going to pale and make them pale in comparison to this. It's going to be ugly. And according to Revelation chapter, in fact, I'm going to get you to turn there. We're going to come back to our text, so you might hold your thumb there. But go to Revelation chapter 12. According to Revelation chapter 12, in this flight of people from Judea, again, two-thirds of them are going to perish, but one-third of them, according to Revelation chapter 12, are going to be helped. They're going to get divine help, intervention, if you will. It describes in this text that and these are Jews that had turned to Christ. Okay, I'll show you that in just a few moments. These are Jews that had converted to Christ Jesus during the tribulation. And John describes a woman that woman represents Israel. He describes that woman fleeing to the wilderness to a place prepared by God. And there they're going to be finding safety and provision for the next 3.5 years, which obviously that 3.5 years coincides with the second half of the tribulation. But let's read it for ourselves. In chapter 12 of Revelation, notice verse 6. It says, and the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared by God. So it says God's intervening here, feed her 1,260 days. That's 3.5 years calculated, okay? And so it's saying that God's made a place here for them to flee. He's facilitated them getting there, and each of those born-again Jews will be provided with a place of refuge somewhere there in the wilderness. It doesn't specify. And they're going to be provided for there, okay? And in what way, we don't know. But it's hard to imagine, with the military advancements that we have in this age, that there could be any place on the planet that several hundred thousand, if not millions, people could flee to and would be accommodated and protected. How that could happen, I don't know, but I know God can do anything he wants, and so he will. And I want you to look across the page, and this is just reiterated once again in verse 14, and it says, unto the woman, verse 14, and to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place where she is nourished for a time and times and a half time from the face of the serpent. Now that time is, those are years, okay? So you have a time, one, times, that's two, that means three, and a half time, that's 3.5 years, okay? So it's just speaking here of again, the same thing. Taken to the wilderness by the hand of God, provided for, protected, and for 3.5 years. And let's go on in verse 15. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. So we don't know. There's a lot of symbolism. There's a lot of figures in Revelation. There's a lot of types and pictures of things. And so it's hard sometimes to distinguish between what's literal and what's metaphorical or a type. But so whether this flood is literal or symbolic, we don't know. It could be a reference of a flood of military forces that Satan sends in and to overwhelm those that are being found refuge there in the wilderness, okay? That could be it, or it could possibly be a literal torrential type flood that somehow is channeled by man, by the devil, and by his cohorts to try to flush them out of their hiding. We don't know, okay? I've read on this, and there's different takes on it. Whatever it is, it's going to be a failed attempt, because God does for them what he's done many times. If you find in the Old Testament what he's done before, is he opens up the earth to swallow up, whether it be an army of men, a flood of military forces, or whether it be a flood of actual flood of water. He's going to open up the ground and swallow up, and it's going to be an unsuccessful attempt by Satan, and that's just going to anger him more. I want you to notice verse 17, and the dragon was wroth. So it just makes him a little bit more mad. And he was wroth with the woman, which is Israel, and he went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keepeth the commandments of God, and watch this, and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So that tells us that the Jews that Jesus is speaking of here fleeing are Jews that have converted to Christ, Messianic Jews, if you will, that have converted to Christ during that tribulation period. And so it's pretty interesting stuff. Now let's go back to Matthew chapter 24, and we'll stay right there. Matthew chapter 24 and verse 17. First he says, those that are in Judea, verse 16, flee to the mountains. Cut and run. Get out of there, okay? And in verse 17, he says, let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of the house, okay? And so this takes us back to the immediate evacuation of the Jews from that region around Jerusalem. After the Antichrist has unmasked himself and he's posed himself now as a threat, and this is all happening very fast after they have seen the abomination of desolation, then this verse just speaks of the urgency of taking flight and getting out of there. Okay, the imagery that Jesus uses here would have been very familiar and understood by his hearers in those New Testament times, because most Palestinian homes would have an outside stairway on their dwellings that led to the roof of the house. It was not uncommon at all for them to gather on the roof of the house, to even sleep on the roof of the house, and it was often common for a family to relax. Go up those stairs and relax on the roof of the house, catching the evening breeze and just being together as a family. So what he's saying here is when word of the abomination of desolation is heard, when you hear this happens, there's such an imminent threat that a person that would be on top of a house would not, don't even take time to go in the house and grab some stuff, is what he's saying. It's so imminent. It's so urgent. Get off the house and go, okay? And it just, again, talking about the threat and how the urgency of getting to safety is, okay? And then run fast as possible. And then he says in verse 18, he continues to reiterate that. He says, neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. This is another example of moving with haste, okay? And the urgency and the seriousness of it. A farmer that's out working in the field possibly has taken his cloak or his shirt off and laid it on a fence. Don't even run across the field and retrieve that. Just go. Or if perhaps you, it could be a reference to returning to the house for clothing or whatever. Whatever it is, don't do it. There's no time for it. Go. Verse 19 says, and woe unto them that are with child, and to them that nurse babies, is what simply what he's saying when he says give suck in those days. Satan has more than once throughout history used the assault of babies to try to accomplish his evil deeds. You remember in the Old Testament book of Exodus where he tried to kill all the male babies of the Israelites there in Egypt because he had wanted to have them thrown into the river. Because why? He wanted to destroy reduce, if you will, the numbers of the Israelites, okay? He targeted the babies. It didn't work then. And then you get all the way in the New Testament, and Satan used Herod to try to destroy and did destroy many of the babies in and around Jerusalem at the birth of Christ. The attempt was, of course, to try to take Jesus out of the picture, okay? And so Satan has no love lost for children. As much as God loves children and favors them, and we do ourselves, Satan doesn't. He has no love lost for children. And this verse could simply be a reference to maybe the hindrance of being pregnant and trying to leave out, or the hindrance of nursing a child he speaks of there, of trying to do that when you're trying to move with haste. Or it could be something a little more diabolical. The ancient Babylonians and the Assyrians as well, during wartime, had a practice of slashing the women's womb open and taking the unborn child and dashing it to pieces before the eyes of the mother. Okay, it's graphic, I know, but history says they did. Okay, and in other cases in wartime, if it wasn't a woman with child, if it was a woman just carrying a baby, fleeing for safety, they would do the same thing: rip it from her arms and kill the child right before the mother's eyes, okay? And so it's a pretty graphic deal, but that could be something like that that's being implied here by what Jesus says in verse 19 about those who are carrying a baby or nursing a baby, okay? Clearly, there's not going to be any restraint by any of the evil forces that are employed by the devil in the tribulation period. There's no Geneva Convention, folks, okay? I mean, it's all what Satan wants to do. There's nothing to withhold or restrain him. So, who knows what it means exactly, okay? We'll look at one last verse here in verse 20. He says, but pray that your flight, that escape that you're trying to make, that it be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. Now, I'm not totally sure what the second part of that means. Obviously, inclement weather, the first part of it is speaking of if it be in the winter, obviously, to flee afoot and try to escape. The inclement weather could affect you. It could be a miserable situation because of temperatures or ice and snow or whatever. But the second part of it, it's not, I don't know exactly what's being meant there. He says if it's pray that your flight's not on the Sabbath day, which we know the Sabbath day is held holy to the Orthodox Jews. Could it be that they're in the Holy Land, that's where they are, Jerusalem, in Judea, that there's enough Orthodox Jews still there objecting to any kind of travel, that there might, from a legalistic standpoint, that people might be forbidden from making that escape during that day, and so there could be some possible resistance or opposition to their flight. That's just some things I read. There's no way of knowing exactly what's being said there. But there's a lot of things that are unclear, but the one thing that is clear is made apparent in verse 21. He says, "Then shall be great tribulation." Okay, we're halfway through now. The adjective is great tribulation. It's going to be worse than it's ever been before. The Bible goes on to say, "Such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be." Okay, so the worst days that this world has ever experienced are going to happen in that 3.5 year period. Okay, it's a terrible thing to think about, but we'll be safe in the arms of Jesus ourselves, raptured out of here, and not having to go through that, okay? All right, we'll stand and be dismissed in a word of prayer. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your faithfulness. And again, please, if you got to go pick up a baby, go outside the property there and don't go up that hallway, okay? All right, Aaron Abear, will you lead us in prayer, please, sir?